Such as trees, grass, birds, animals, and so on. Mountains also pour forth unlimited quantities of crystalline water in the form of waterfalls and rivers, and this water gives life to all. By studying the example of mountains, one should learn the art of providing for the happiness of all living entities. Similarly, one may take excellent lessons from the pious trees who offer innumerable benefits such as fruits, flowers, cooling shade, and medicinal extracts. Even when a tree is suddenly cut down and dragged away, the tree does not protest but continues to give service to others in the form of firewood. Thus one should become the disciple of such magnanimous trees and learn from them the qualities of saintly conduct. According to Srila Madhvacharya, the word parārtaikantasambhavaha indicates that one should dedicate all of one's wealth and other aspects to the welfare of others. By one's acquired opulence, one should especially try to please the spiritual master and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus the demigods, as well as all truly respectable superior personalities, will automatically be pleased. By developing saintly conduct, as described in this verse, one will become tolerant, and this will free one from the useless agitation of the material senses, which drive one to wander throughout the world searching in vain for material happiness. Well, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has also emphasized the tree's quality of tolerance, talo eva sahishana, kirtaniya sadha hari. One who is as tolerant as a tree can chant the holy name of Krishna constantly, finding ever new satisfaction. Om Janati Nirandasya Janjana Salakaya Chaturun Militam Jaina Tasmaye Sri Gurudev Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovishkam Sravinam Jaina Uttalaye Svayam Yukalakaranam Nayam Dutarayiva Adantikam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Amukam Namghayate Kirin Yatripa Tamahamande Ekanta Sambhava Parata. So the sole reason for a person's existence should be for the benefit of others. The statement of this verse. Usually we exist for the benefit of one person, and that's not Krishna. And even though we faithfully serve, you know, the concept of self, trying to satisfy our desires, we never ever reach a state of full satisfaction. So we're always chasing the will-o'-the-wisp of desire. And that desire manifests in different ways. You know, intrinsically we're all the same. Intrinsically we're all the same, in that we're all spirit souls. So we have the same source, we have the same qualities, we have the same nature. But because our personalities are manifest through the modes of material nature, through the material energy, and all of the various combinations that come about as a result. So we see different countries, different locations, they have different types of air, different types of soil, different types of water, different climate, different temperatures, for example. So even though we're all the same spiritually, so intrinsically we're the same, because our personality is manifest through the material energy in all of its variety and variations, then we all come out different. Of course we all have, even though we say we're all intrinsically the same, actually we each have our individuality. So we're the same, but different. This is a jintya, abheda, abheda, tattva. Just like we can say we're the same as Krishna, but at the same time as we're the same as Krishna, we're also different from him. And so therefore we get variety. And so as a consequence, we're the same in that, especially in material existence, the manifestation of personality usually exists in selfishness. And it's focused on trying to satisfy ourselves. Because that manifests in through the material energy, then we get all of the different varieties of desire. And so, you know, you get a situation where this is probably not the spot for everybody to sit. There's plenty of room over here. Just come sit over there. It's just that everybody comes in and they like to sit right there, because it's a humble thing to do, but it gets a bit crowded after a while. There's a limit to how many people can sit in 2 square meters of space. And that's why this seat should be back here a little bit, actually. So, we're all chasing these desires. Basically selfish desire. And the end result is that ultimately nobody's really happy. Yet, you know, we're thinking, oh, if I could just get this, if I could just get that, I tried this, but if it's a subtle manipulation, I change it a little bit, then it'll be alright. And we do that, and we're happy for a while, but then we become dissatisfied with it. Because it's not. Basically, it's in pursuit of material things. So, here it's recommended that rather than thinking about our own self-satisfaction, we should be concerned about the satisfaction of others, because we'll just be chasing the mind and the senses all the time and we'll never really be happy. And, you know, whenever something pops into our head, then we'll think, yes, that's what I should pursue. Now, the reason why the mountain and the tree are pertinent or relevant in this case is that the mountain and the tree, they're tolerant of the comings and goings. It's like a tree, it's, you know, like the plum tree in the courtyard. How many generations of kids have climbed into the plum tree and swung around in it? Or, you know, as happened just the other day, you know, one devotee bangs his head against the plum tree, so what does he do? Pulls out a saw and chops off the branch. Huh? Stupid tree. That's what happens. That stupid tree. You didn't watch out. Bang the head on the tree. But does the plum tree protest? You know, stuck in the courtyard in the winter time, in the summertime, you know, on the day when it got to 40, whatever it was, 3 days in a row, 43, then all of the deciduous trees in Melbourne got totally scorched. They all went brown, as if it was autumn. It was in the middle of summer. Yet, do they complain? They're tolerant. So whether it's really cold or really hot, or whether somebody chops their branches off, whether they get watered or whether they don't get watered, trees are very, very tolerant. And not only tolerant, but still giving shade, still giving fruit, still giving. Like the mountain also. The mountain is described as a classic Govardhan, Giriraj, the king of all mountains. He's providing caves and streams and special, secret, hidden places for Radha and Krishna to meet, the cowherd boys to play, providing minerals and other pasturing grounds for the cows. But the tree and the mountain have this characteristic of being extremely generous to others, being of shelter to others. So it's mentioned here, para artha e kanta sambhava. The real purpose, or the sole purpose, not necessarily the real purpose, the sole purpose, ekanta means the only, ekanta, the one and only purpose for a person's existence should be to live for the benefit of others. And then one will get free from the, you know, the pushings of the mind, the pushing of the senses. By emulating the tree especially, one is able to tolerate the difficulties of life, of existence. When one does so, then one can be really happy, rather than trying to find happiness in one's own concocted desires. One should seek happiness in rendering service to others. It's not difficult to make people happy. Right? Not difficult to make people happy. we can feed them. Right? still is one of the best ways. If you want to make somebody happy, then feed them what they like to eat. Simple. It's not very difficult to make people happy. And then generally speaking, if they're happy, then we'll also be happy. We'll be satisfied. Seeking our satisfaction in the happiness of others is not difficult to do, and is very satisfying. Not difficult to do. So the devotees basically dedicate themselves to this principle of working for the benefit of others, especially from the point of view of spiritual advancement, spiritual focus, spiritual life. The benefit, the prime focus of the preachers, especially the followers of Mahaprabhu, is to work for the benefit of others. Which means, and that means of course, understanding who they actually are. Not necessarily working just for the benefit of the material body, providing some temporary shelter or some temporary amelioration of life's difficulties. But it means understanding the real identity of the person, which means understanding that they're not the body, that they're spiritual by nature. There's a proper understanding of existence. And so therefore the devotees go out of their way to benefit others by enlightening them as to what their true identity really is. This is considered to be real para artha. The topmost benefit. Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita that there is no one more dear to me than that person who teaches the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita to the devotees. We want to become. If one really wants to become satisfied and happy by developing the saintly conduct of a devotee and then extending that saintly conduct to the working for the benefit of others, then one will become very dear to Krishna. This is a fundamental principle of Krishna consciousness, or for the Gaudiya Nandis. They're concerned about their own benefit. There's a certain amount of selfishness in pursuing spiritual life, but that personal selfishness is put aside when a person understands, well, it's in my best interest to actually work for the benefit of everybody else. So that service, the service mood of a mountain and the service attitude of a tree, and that quality of tolerance and forbearance, even in spite of the difficulties, is being encouraged here. By developing this saintly conduct of tolerance, one will be able to get free from the agitation of the mind and the senses. Wherein, you know, we have some difficulty and then we think, well, we've got to change everything to get rid of the difficulty. The Bhagavad Gita teaches us, the Bhagavatam teaches us, the conduct of a tree in a mountain teaches that actually one has to learn to be tolerant in the face of material difficulties. Because no matter how much we try to adjust or manipulate or change the situation, there will always be problems. The material world is designed in such a way so that there will always be problems and that you'll never get rid of them. It's not possible. It's designed to give us trouble. We think, oh, I can get rid of all the problems, but actually you can't. Not possible. The material world is designed to give us trouble. What is it? Jamman Mitchu Jada Vyadhi Dukkha Dosha Anudarshanam. This is actually, we are meant to see the material world for what it is. It is not a place of enjoyment, actually. Dukkha. What's dukkha mean? Misery. Sadness. Right? Misery. Dukkha Dosha Anudarshanam. The darshan of the transcendentalist, when he sees the material world, is jamma, birth, mrityu, death, and in between, jara, old age, and vyadhi, disease. Something to look forward to. But you can be happy. Devotees are generally happy. We face the material problems fairly and squarely and accept them for what they are by being tolerant. Then, basically, the second instruction of the Bhagavad Gita is, you're not the body, you're a spirit soul. As a spirit soul, you're the permanent, the tatastha, kutastha, that which is permanent, steady. The identity of self is that one thing which is constant. But we are situated in a world of, the other constant is change. We're situated in a world of change, so everything's always moving around us. So, after Krishna says, you're not the body, then he says, Madras Bhashastu Kuntaya Sitoshna Sukha Dukkataha Agama Payano Nityas Tangsta Dikjaswa Bharat. So he says, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress, heat and cold, pleasure and pain, fame and infamy. are coming and going, just like winter and summer seasons. There's always this cycle. It's always changing. One has to learn to be to fixture, which means tolerant. And that's the quality that we can learn from, especially from the tree. Vidyananda quotes the Shikshastika. Trinadupi sanichina tarodata sakishina amanadina manadina kirtaniya sadahari. Rather than wandering in the material world trying to create, happiness in a place where basically it's all dukkha, is fruitless, pointless. But a person who can tolerate, just like a tree, can tolerate the difficulties, then that person can actually be happy. And we just sit down in one place and chant Hare Krishna. If you really want to be happy, then what's the best thing? Hmm?
chant
Hare Krishna. There's no more fun to be had than to just sit down and tolerate the mind and the senses and all the other things that are going on around us. Just sit down and chant Hare Krishna. There's no more fun to be had. It's strange. Simple things, the most simple things.
And you're here with them in Vrindavan.
Well,
are you and me?
Wherever. I like sitting up against the wall over here. Anyway, actually, it Chaitanya is actually a very special place, and that's also a nice place to chant Hare Krishna. But I like to sit in this temple room and chant Hare Krishna, to be quite frank with you. After I've had a good night's sleep and, you know, I've been reading Prabhupada's books, and just sit down and chant and not be bothered by the mind, you know. On and on. Just ignore it and somehow just absorb the consciousness in the sound vibration of the Maha Mantra. In order to do that, actually, you have to be quiet. You have to be tolerant. So that when the mind's chattering away, you have to ignore it. So the example of the tree is pertinent for the devotees. And so the Avadhuta Brahmana was explaining how if one wants to make advancement, then one can learn from the guru manifest in the form of the tree and in the form of the mountain. They're always giving. You know, we think, if I'm always giving, then what about me? But life teaches us that if we're always giving, then in due course of time, people will reciprocate, especially in the association of the devotees. What? Tadati pratigrinati guyam makyati pichati bhunte bhojayate jaiva sadvijim priti lakshana. These are the six exchanges that are demonstrations of love and affection in the association of the devotees. And Prabhupada is a good example. You know, Prabhupada, when he first started preaching on the Bowery and at 26 Second Avenue on the Lower East Side, Prabhupada cooked the feast, served the feast, gave the class, led the kirtan. had to clean up afterwards, right? Had to wash the pots. Prabhupada had to do everything. So, you know, he was just giving in the beginning. Of course, Prabhupada was always giving. And in the beginning it looked like there was no reciprocation. But because of Prabhupada giving his life, practically speaking, sacrificing everything for the benefit of others, then as his service to others bore fruit, and you know, as it developed, as it manifests, then as Prabhupada gave his life, then those devotees to whom he gave that service, they then gave their lives to him. And that principle, you know, that principle is valid for all of us, not just for Prabhupada. If we give our lives for the service of others, then those persons will reciprocate. Well, they are reciprocating, we can see that, but there is a reciprocation. So it's not like, you know, I just have to, you know, sacrifice myself and, you know, that'll be the death of me. Right? But rather, there is a reciprocation, especially in devotional service. where one who dedicates themselves for the benefit of others will experience a natural reciprocation and appreciation for the service that's rendered. What is speaking of the fact that one will actually make spiritual advancement. Even if we have material motivations, initially we may have some material motivation. That's why the story of Dhruva Maharaj is so important, because Dhruva Maharaj was actually surrendering to Krishna because he wanted something. Right? He was materially motivated. So ordinarily, you know, we encourage pure devotional service. Devotional service without a covering of some desire for learning or a desire for liberation is considered to be the topmost. But even if a person does come to devotional service with some material motivation, still, the reason why, and this is the reason why Dhruva Maharaj's story is so important, is because even though Dhruva Maharaj came to Krishna with some consideration, the process of devotional service was so powerful that it purified him. He was purified. That's why his story is appreciated by the devotees and studied. Because even though Dhruva Maharaj was looking for a kingdom, when Lord Vishnu appeared to grant his wish, he had developed actually a spontaneous desire to serve the Lord. And so when the Lord said, "Here, you know, what do you want? I'm here to give it to you." He said, "No, I don't want it." He'd gone through all of his trouble to execute all of his austerities to please Lord Vishnu so he could get what he wanted. But when the Lord appeared to give it to him, he said, "Okay, you've performed all this austerity, I'm here now prepared to give it to you." He said, "No, I don't want it." Because he'd become purified. So it doesn't matter if a person comes to Krishna consciousness with some material motivation. If they apply themselves properly to the process, apply these principles, in this case being magnanimous to others and tolerant of difficulties, all the while being engaged in the process of devotional service, and learning how to reciprocate in the different exchanges, giving in charity, receiving gifts, revealing one's mind in confidence, inquiring confidentially, distributing prasadam and taking prasadam. These are the six exchanges of affection or love. Tolerating the difficulties. Working for the benefit of others. Then one will make advancement. One will develop an attraction, a spontaneous attraction for Krishna. Spontaneous attraction for devotional service. In the beginning we may not have that spontaneity. We're not immediately enthusiastic to want to perform austerities. We're not enthusiastic about tolerating difficulties. We like things to be made easy for us. We're not initially not enthusiastic to help others. We're more concerned about ourselves. But if we apply ourselves to the process, regulated process of devotional service, Vaidhi Bhakti basically. And then explain, Vaidhi Bhakti is like, it's like, you know, when you get a match, inside the match is fire. Right? And if you strike a match on a matchbox, the fire will come out. The process of the spontaneous mood of devotional service is actually in us all. But we have to ignite it, and the process of like striking the match on the side of the matchbox, which gets us the flame. The process whereby which we get that raga or attachment to Krishna, which means raga means basically, you know, when we see something, we don't think, oh, I like that. We're just immediately attracted to it. There's no intellectual processing. You know, when a child sees its mother, it just is instantly drawn to the mother. Doesn't think, doesn't rationalize it, or it's just mommy. So that spontaneous affection for Krishna, it's covered over by these different material motivations. There's a desire for, well, there's the mitigation of misery or suffering. We surrender to Krishna out of the desire just to get rid of our problems. Or there's a desire to get something for ourselves. Or there may be some understanding of the greatness of God and some appreciation. So therefore, there's a sense of admiration or appreciation or a sense of duty, if you like. But this is not spontaneous. It's not spontaneous. It's not spontaneous love and affection. But that love and affection can be brought out by, like we strike the match and the fire comes out, through the process of Vaidhi. So that Vaidhi Bhakti is like the striking of the match to bring out the fire. And these qualities especially, tolerance, magnanimity, these are essential items that need to be meditated on and cultivated in order for one to make advancement in that Vaidhi process. And then by practicing Vaidhi Bhakti, then gradually, the flame of pure love will come out, just like it did for Dhruva Maharaj. He was initially motivated by material desires, but because he adhered strictly to the order of his guru, and that's really the process of Vaidhi, is to follow the process of devotional service under the guidance of one's gurus. And then that natural affection, or that natural attraction for rendering devotional service, will come about. Such that, you know, the austerity of being a merciful to others ceases to be an austerity and actually becomes something attractive, something that one's happy to do. Enthusiastic. Back again. Prayer of answers. So Lord Chaitanya has emphasized this point, especially of the tree. One has to be tolerant of life's difficulties. Then one can kirtaniya sadaa hari, one can chant Hare Krishna constantly. One can engage in devotional service. One can be happy, basically, as happy as you can be in the material world, anyway. Actually, happier than anybody in the material world, because you're not in the material world, ultimately, basically, you're elevated to the spiritual platform. That's why the devotees can be happy, because they're not on the material platform anymore. They're actually situated on the spiritual platform. So, we should become disciples of the magnanimous mountains and trees. Huh? That's what's being recommended here. And here it says, Aikanta Sambhava. That should be our sole purpose. Interesting. Mountains are very generous, and the trees, generous, magnanimous, and the trees also tolerant. Does anyone have any comments or questions on any of those points? Association. Yes, association. We need association.
Then we can capture it.
Yep.
The tree also gives its shelter to the pipes and sinner.
The sheep tree gives shelter to the
pipes and sinner?
Yes. Doesn't discriminate. Yep. Tree will give shade to everybody, whether they're pious or impious. So a devotee gives shelter to anybody. That's a lesson that we can learn from Lord Ramchandra. He gave shelter to the monkeys, right? And to Vibhishan, he's a demon. He was on the opposing side, but because he surrendered, we also have to be able to identify a cheat, right? So it's not that we give shelter to everybody ultimately. Yeah, we'll give them shelter so long as they're prepared to be, behave properly. But if a person comes as a cheat, we'll welcome anybody to the temple, but say if they've got their eyes on the donation box and they want a picture, we might not be so hospitable. Huh? So we have to be also discriminating. On the one hand, we'll give shelter and encourage everybody, but basically we also watch their behaviour. And if somebody's misbehaving, then we have to be prepared to rectify that. Mums and dads have to be really tolerant. And we can be tolerant occasionally. Yeah. Kids are wonderful so long as they belong to other people. Advantage of other people having children, you can give them back. But if they're your own children, then you cannot. You have to be. I mean, being a parent is another example of this being tolerant and magnanimous. Right? It's interesting, isn't it? You know, we think we're going to have a family to enjoy. But actually, we have a family to develop saintly qualities. And you have to develop them in truckloads. My brother's just had a baby. Who else is it? Just had a child. Sri Krishna Chandra, he does only a couple of days, so hasn't quite got into it yet. Somebody, oh, I can't remember. and you know, a lot of sleepless nights. Going to work, you know. What happened? The boss is wondering why the performance is dropping. Because he can't stay awake. Sitting in his desk, the eyes are open, but there's no mental activity going on. Devotees get like that sometimes. Lack of sleep. The lights are on, but nobody's home. So it's really essential element of devotional service, this point of tolerance. Okay, Gunaraj Shana Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Jai Prabhupada Ki Jai.